Hey everybody, welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe. The Vet Tech Cafe is a podcast centered around veterinary technicians and nurses, hosted by myself, Dave Cowan, and my good friend Jeff Backus. We strive to discuss current issues facing our profession and give our colleagues a voice and a medium to enter into these discussions. Our guests are experts in the field that we hope can help our listeners work towards dealing with these issues, as well as coming up with solutions that can lead to change. One thing we would ask of you, our listeners, is to rate and review us on whatever podcast platform you're using. We're not exactly sure how or why this helps us, but apparently it does. If you have questions, comments, or would like to be a guest on the Vet Tech Cafe, please contact us at vettechcafe@gmail.com. So without further ado, come on in, grab yourself a cup of coffee, and get ready for another episode of the Vet Tech Cafe.
Hello, caffeinators. How's everybody doing out there today? Thanks for coming by the Vet Tech Cafe. Dave, how you doing out there?
We're doing great. It's middle of fall now. Well, maybe still the beginning of fall. But things are going great here. How are you doing up there?
Getting ready
for your move?
Yeah, getting ready for the move. Have a family friend coming this weekend, and we're going to go look at some, take a driving trip, go look at some foliage, and do all the fun New England fall things.
The leaf peepers.
Yep. it's finally starting to get a little cold up here, which is great. But yeah, we're getting ready for the move. I have a job interview with Animal Poison Control on Monday.
Awesome.
I'm super stoked about. So yeah, it's all starting to kind of to head down. Head down the path, and we'll be on the road 2 weeks from tomorrow, which is crazy. And
wow,
we're coming down to see you, which I'm super excited about. That'll be a lot of fun. So
hopefully it's not raining, so you can actually see the farm. Hopefully we won't have any of those things that make you want to burn down my farm.
Right. So we saw, you know, we had our last episode with Brandy Halua, which was an important episode for you and I for many reasons, but I saw an article on Dr. Andy Rourke's page this week that really kind of tied in with our episode, and it's a shame I didn't see it before we recorded, because the three of us could have talked about it. But it was an article by Candice Boudreau, who's a CVT, and the article was titled, "If You Need to Leave, It's Okay." And what did you think?
I mean, that was a great article, and kind of just resonated a lot of stuff we talked about with Brandy. Of if you're in a career and you're not happy, you shouldn't be there.
Right.
What's the point of doing it?
Right.
You know, they always say it's not a job if you love what you do, and if you're not loving what you're doing, then why are you there?
Right.
And you know, she talked about giving birth to her child,
right?
And that was a big change for her. And I mean, that happens a lot in this field. And she even mentioned there that she was maybe dealing with a little bit of burnout at one point, and
kind of didn't realize it.
Yeah, and just kind of getting into that mindset of once you leave it, you know, it's not so much of a chore to actually go to that job. And I'm kind of in that same spot right now where, you know, I haven't worked a shift in quite a while. Well, I did one last week, but it was only for a few hours. Getting back into that practice, like reinvigorated, like I've been away for so long that it was actually enjoyable again to do some of that stuff and be back on the floor and dealing with patients and dealing with treatments and interacting with doctors and things like that. So that I do get that a lot of that time away does really make you miss it.
Yeah. And she kind of spoke a little bit to the guilt.
Brandy talked about.
Yeah, that. Exactly. Of I can't leave the hospital. I can't leave my people behind. I can't leave the patients. I can't leave the clients. And you know, she was coming from a new mom perspective, as you said, and her situation afforded her the ability to kind of take some time away. But by the end of the article, she was saying, you know, she kind of sees herself going back into clinic. It seems like maybe somewhere down the road. But really, the point of the article, like you said, was if it's not right, you know, don't feel this incredible pull to stay in something you're not happy in or you're miserable in or what have you, because, you know, sometimes the change is actually good. And so it was just kind of, like I said, with the episode that we had, it was kind of a refreshing perspective. It wasn't really something I had seen in writing, although we've talked to many people that have this kind of perspective, and it was just kind of nice to see timing right in line with what we had been talking about. So we'll post a link to that. Again, it's called If You Need to Leave, It's Okay by Candice Boudreau, CVT, and it's on Dr. Andy Rourke's website if you want to check it out there too. But, you know, just a really good article about
I loved at the end, one of the last things she says is, no job is worth your happiness, your well-being, or your life.
Right.
That's just perfect.
Yeah, for you know, some of the, you know, experiences that people have in veterinary medicine. That's something people need to hear, and you know, definitely worth the read, especially if our most recent episode with Brandy resonated with you in any sort of way. I definitely recommend.
Not that we want people to leave.
Right. Again, yeah, we're not advertising for people to leave, but if you feel, you know, maybe it's just leaving your clinic and going and finding another job or finding another facet to the field. So anyway, yeah, I would definitely recommend checking that out. This episode is a fun episode.
It was fun, yeah.
Yeah. I think it was maybe in March or early April we recorded.
It was the very beginning of COVID.
Yeah, yeah. Early on, we recorded a collaboration episode with four other veterinary podcasts. It was a collaboration episode. And today, or this episode, we kind of, we recorded this about a week ago. We kind of circled back with this group of podcasters and talked about where kind of everybody was at with COVID, in terms of how their hospitals are functioning, their clients, who's been affected, so on and so forth. And spoiler alert, everybody around the world, it sounds like, is having the same problem, because we do have some podcasters from Australia. But
And they seem to be more in a lockdown than we are.
Yeah, for sure. Seem that way, huh? And then we also talked about, you know, we kind of shifted the focus quite a bit with this week being Vet Tech Week here in the U.S. Down in Australia, two of the podcasters we were talking with, or two different podcasts, three different hosts. In Australia, there's Vet Nurse Day. So we talk a little bit about that. And then, of course, you know, it's also the month of October is Vet Tech Week up in Canada, or Vet Tech Month, excuse me.
Vet Tech Month, yeah.
Yeah. So we talked a lot about that as well. So just kind of as a reminder who everybody is, and we introduce ourselves in the episode, but just so you know, and I would highly recommend, if you like veterinary podcasts, I definitely would recommend checking all these out.
They're all very different too.
Yes, very, very much. Radio Vet Nurse, and the host is Kat Robinson down in Australia, and I would say her podcast is probably the closest in format to what we do.
Yeah, I would say so.
Two Vets Talk Pets with Robbie Anderton and Lewis Kirkham. They're both veterinarians, I believe. One does behavior and one's more internal medicine. But they're veterinarians also in Australia, and both just really, really funny guys.
Yeah, they're hilarious.
Veterinary Anesthesia Nerds podcast with Tasha McNerney, who's been a guest on our show. Yep. Of course, the Facebook group for Veterinary Anesthesia Nerds is a huge, huge smash success, and everybody loves her podcast, so definitely check that out. And then lastly, kind of our sister podcast, because we launched at the same time.
And the host
time.
Of the...
The host of the episode is the Internal Medicine for Vet Techs podcast with Jordan Porter and Yvonne Brandenburg.
And so Jordan did all the editing for this, so thank you, Jordan, for that.
Yeah, because this is what, 2, 4, 6, 8 different people talking about all these things. So Jordan pulled all the audio and looped it all together, and so thank you, because that's a monstrous task. So but anyway, we just kind of circle back to the whole coronavirus thing, and then we try to talk about Vet Nurse Day or Vet Tech Week or Vet Tech Month and what everybody's doing, because that kicks off tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow's Vet Tech Week
Here in the States.
Happy Vet Tech Week, everybody.
Happy Vet Tech Week.
Bosses take good care of you.
Yeah, I think today is Vet Nurse Day in Australia, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was October 9th. So happy Vet Nurse Day, which of course will be in the past, but happy Vet Nurse Day to all of our friends and colleagues down in Australia.
Have some listeners from Australia.
Yeah, and I think Kat said that in New Zealand it's Vet Nurse Awareness Day.
Okay.
Today. So same kind of idea, just a little bit different title. But anyway, around the world, wherever you're listening from, if you have any sort of vet tech, like countrywide vet tech recognition or celebration, if it's a day, if it's a week, if it's a month, and it's one that we haven't talked about, write into us. Let us know where it is. And we'd love, especially if you have any information about it, we would love to post that on our social media and promote that and get the word out about that kind of happening in another country that maybe we don't know about. So definitely let us know if there's another one out there that we haven't mentioned, because we'd love to get the word out.
We do
out,
seem so. To be kind of sheltered here. We're kind of focused on everything that happens in the U.S. And, you know, until something like this comes up, we don't really think about what goes on, like what happens in the U.K.
Right,
do they have something different in the U.K. or
I mean, just anywhere. We've had downloads from over 50 countries. If there's any sort of anything like that, or even if you have vet tech news or anything, like just like send it to us. We'd love to see what's going on in your home country and just help kind of continue the conversation. So,
yeah.
And then Dave, we have another episode coming out next week. We won't really give any spoilers, but no. We're starting off year two with another banger of an episode we're really excited about. And
it's
a really
great,
really timely and relevant topic. And at some point soon, we're going to have an Instagram live. We've got a couple things we want to talk about. So keep an eye out for that. And
then we're going to have a live when you come down to visit.
Yes, yes.
We're not sure what we're going to talk about, but maybe we'll just go look at the horses and the goats and the donkey.
Yeah, we'll just take a stroll. Vet Tech tap room out to the patio, and we'll stroll around the farm and look at all the animals and chat. But yeah,
and have some beverages.
Yeah, and for sure. And that'll be. I think I get down there Sunday, October 26th, if I'm not mistaken. So keep an eye out for that, everybody. We're gonna have some fun with that. But anyway, happy Vet Tech Week. Happy Vet Tech Week,
everybody.
Month. Happy Vet Nurse Day.
Thank you for all you do.
Yes, thank you so much. And all the best to you guys, and I hope you guys enjoy the episode.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to, a lot of podcasts, actually. This is our follow-up sort of episode. We did one with COVID. Now we're doing one kind of as a COVID update, but also celebrating Vet Tech Appreciation Week. I am Yvonne Brandenburg, and Jordan Porter and I, we are part of the Internal Medicine for Vet Techs podcast. And then we also have, let's go to the next one. Dave, you're next to me. So Dave, you can go now.
We are part. Me and Jeff are part of the Vet Tech Cafe. Our podcast is posting every other Sunday. Sometimes a little bit extra when we have our Vet Tech Tap Room. That's where we kind of let loose, and it's just he and I chatting. But we're happy to be here and happy to give this update to everybody.
I will say, Lewis, you're under Dave in my picture on my Zoom screen, so you're next.
So, yeah, my name is Dr. Lewis Kirkham. I do a podcast with my colleague, Dr. Robbie Anderton.
G'day.
Called Two Vets Talk Pets. And we're coming all the way from Melbourne, Australia, enduring the supposedly one of the longest lockdowns for COVID that's known to mankind. May or not be true.
it's true. And then I've got Kat next on my screen.
I'm Kat Robinson, and I have a podcast called Radio Vet Nurse. It's usually just me flying solo with a guest released every month. And I've had the pleasure of interviewing a couple of the other podcasters in this group today. And it's nice to be in a group setting. I'm in far north Queensland, so I feel really bad for Lewis and Robbie down in Melbourne, because we've not been locked down and it has been hot and sunny. So I've been trying to keep that off of social media for my friends down south.
Nice.
Appreciate it.
That's right. Did I see you down at the St Kilda Beach at all those rays with all the other the young people down there on Friday night? You know, sort of, just throwing in the face of all the lockdown rules we have here in Melbourne. Were you out there in the fluorescent shirts and stuff?
Well, it's amazing for our American listeners. Certainly St Kilda Beach is a big, might be a known area, backpacker area in Melbourne. I don't know if you guys have heard of it all, but down there now we're allowed to have picnics, and there are, but you're only allowed to have, you know, you've got to be a meter and a half from other people having picnics. So all over the grassed areas, massive grass area, there are big 1.5 meter circles for everyone to sit and have picnics. Oh, and it's like someone took a drone shot, and it's like crop circles, and with all these people just sitting in their little, individual thing. It's amazing. Unbelievable.
All right. Well, before we keep up, because we're all talkers, obviously we have podcasts. last but definitely not least is Tasha. Miss Tasha.
Hey guys, what's going on? I'm Tasha McNerney, and I host the Veterinary Anesthesia Nerds podcast, which is a case-based podcast where we talk about how you treat certain disease processes, and how you would do anesthesia safely on various different things. I would love to tell you exactly when we drop our podcast every week, but with a crazy work schedule and homeschooling a third grader, I have no agenda and I don't know. It just kind of comes out whenever. So look for us whenever.
Oh, no. Hashtag mom life.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're all on Zoom, obviously, for multiple reasons. First being, we're all in very different places in the world, but also because of COVID. So, shout out to the moms in this group. I think Jordan, Tasha, and Kat, you guys are all moms dealing with trying to be teachers. How about the dads? Fun. Are the dads also teaching right now?
Yeah, I am. I got two at home. One goes back to school, not this week, next week. But homeschooling two teenage daughters is fun with all the attractions that screens provide when you lock yourself in your bedroom. Yeah, it's not easy.
Well, not to mention, like, I have a 9-year-old daughter, and the attitude I get now, let alone when they're teenagers, like, I can't imagine. Like.
Yeah, I just worry it's a whole generation raised by potentially alcoholic teachers.
Yes, exactly. Me yesterday, I think, I don't know, it was probably like 10 a.m. and I was like, we'd only been working for like an hour. We got a late start. So I was like, let's do donuts for breakfast. I was trying to be a cool mom. And then we got like an hour in and I was like, all right, I'm done. Like, I'm over it. Like, we're done for the day. I was like, it's just.
Class dismissed, guys.
Yeah.
Exactly. My daughter was like, see, my daughter is like the good child because she was like, no, I'm going to go ahead and finish. And my son was like, nope, cool. Can I have your phone? I was like, okay.
I don't know how you guys are dealing with it. I feel like I am very fortunate that I do not have kids. It reconfirms the reason I don't want to have kids because, oh my God, it's so much work. I hear poor Jordan struggles as well as some of my other friends. And I don't know how you guys are surviving that. Plus, I think everybody's still working full time, right? Everybody's back in clinic.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yep.
Yeah.
Working full time, side business, teacher, mom.
Right. All the various hats.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The side gigs to make sure I don't have to pay for my kids to go places for school. Like,
oh my goodness.
Yeah. The barter system.
Yeah, that's, I was gonna say, I think this is probably the thing that has probably affected all of us the most during all this, because I remember when we were talking the last time about COVID, it was businesses are going to shut down, we're laying off people, we're furloughing people, how are we going to survive the pandemic? And I believe we were proved completely wrong. I don't know about everybody else, but I know my clinic is definitely the busiest I think it has ever been. Does that sound kind of right around the world?
Yeah.
Yep. Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And not only busier, which is then a really, like, how do you read the tea leaves on that? You know, there's a pandemic going around, you know, in humans. So why is it that then suddenly vet clinics are a lot busier? It's not like our animals are getting sicker. The amount of disease that's out there is going to be the same as what it was pre-pandemic. But absolutely, I think it's just that people are noticing it more and people are spending more time with their animals. But yeah, it's been busy. But then added on to that, the inefficiencies that are inherent in trying to provide what here we in Victoria call a COVID safe work environment, that it makes it makes it tough. So yeah, we're busier and yet less efficient, which is an awesome combo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cause, Robbie, Lewis and Kat, you guys are all in general practice, right?
That's right.
And I think the rest of us are all in specialty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I know for specialty, I think it's a little bit different for us, because I know I talked to my friends that are RNGP, their appointments pre-COVID were like 20 to 30 minutes. whereas my specialty appointments for like a consult is an hour. And so I feel like for my situation, it's affected me, but I don't think it's affected me nearly as bad, I think, as like a general practitioner. I don't know what you guys think about that.
Now, my question for GP though is, like, are you seeing more sick patients because people are noticing, or are you actually still getting more, like, even vaccine appointments because people are home and they're remembering, like, oh, you know what? Like, I'm home, let's do this and let's update our vaccines and get more heart. Like, are you seeing more of the routine appointments than you think you normally would because people are also home to remember it?
Perhaps more routine appointments because there's been an increase or an uptake in animal ownership. There's been a lot of people getting puppies and getting kittens because they will be home and able to spend the time with them. So what do you think, Lewis and Robbie?
Yeah, certainly getting a lot more kittens and people adopting new dogs, but we're sort of trying to put, we're doing obviously kitten and puppy vaccines. We're trying to put off older dog vaccines a little bit, but certainly we're seeing a lot of sick animals. It's really weird, like, you know, and difficult sick cases too sometimes that as GP, we send them off to you guys to deal with the special, special guys. So
yeah, not just like the ear infections, but like actual like difficult diseases.
Yeah.
Things are changing for these animals too, because they're, if the owners are only able to go out to exercise once or twice a day, then we've got some dogs that are being taken out for regular walks that haven't been walked or run before. So, you know, maybe more cruciate tears and things like that. But also if people are home and feeding animals weird things all day, we're going to see more pancreatitis and more disease associated with obesity and, you know, increased weight. So the home environment, I guess, really shifted for a lot of these animals.
I think too, some other points that I've noticed is, one, this is kind of the silly one, is that people are home and they're like staring at their animals because they love them and they're like, oh, what are you doing? And you're like, they sleep all day. Well, you used to be at work and yes, they slept all day before. But I also think the stress level, I think, is also affecting pets, especially cats, I feel like. We see, you know, fluted. Obviously, if there's stress in the environment, that affects them too. So I wonder if it's also stress that's making some of our patients sicker as well. I don't know.
I can definitely say that, like in our ER, the exotics certainly follow that line as far as like owners being home to stare at them. I mean, I feel like we're seeing more exotics for sure. Like our exotics department has been running with their hair on fire for like 8 months because, you know, so often, as unfortunate as it is, they would just come home from work and they'd be dead. Whereas now they're home and they do something about it before it gets to that point. Oh. They still come in very, very sick, but the percentage of exotics of our overall cases is, I mean, it's still like, you know, it's not even 10%, but whereas it used to be 2 or 3% to our ER, now it's like 7 or 8 or 9. I mean, it's 2 or 3 fold through our ER, which for a group of people who may or may not be well trained in exotics, you know, again, just adds to that level of stress, 100%.
Wow. Yeah, that's interesting. I guess I didn't think about that, but I imagine too, like once things do get back to normal, that it's also going to be a huge shift for our dogs and cats again. Like I know my dog has been reading my anxiety like crazy and she lays with me and she's become more anxious, that I'm curious to see how these dogs do if they do have those owners who are home all the time.
Absolutely, John.
Cats are going to be so happy when everybody goes back to work.
Yeah, exactly.
Cats are going to be happy, and we're currently stockpiling fluoxetine at our clinic, ready for the inevitable. Yeah, stressed dogs.
Oh,
absolutely. We'll build a shed out the back, and we're just loading it up. We're getting all this. You know, I wouldn't say illegal fluoxetine, but you know, it's just colourful. You know, like Lewis and I have been talking about it on our pod, and like it is going to be horrific when people go back. The amount of the thing that worries me is the number of dogs, these COVID puppies that are picked up that are then going to be surrendered because of you know, the anxieties and the lack of socialization that people haven't put in. People unfortunately often don't listen to us at the best of times. And then they don't want to hear about behavior things that aren't going to be easily solved. But, you know, that's why Lewis got into behavior in the first place, because he loves the easy stuff.
Well, it's an interesting paradigm, because we actually don't actually know how all these animals are going to behave. We've never done this before. We have no idea. So, you know, us vets out there, you know, trying to be a bit of a devil's advocate, us vets out there are all saying, oh, it's going to be terrible. How are these puppies going to be? We're going to have us home, and then suddenly we're not going to be home. It's going to be horrible. But we don't actually know. Are they just going to go, oh,
you know, I mean, 20% of dogs essentially have anxiety issues anyway. So there's already that cohort there. But is it necessarily going to mean there's going to be 50% of dogs, or is it a dog's going to just be really adaptable and adjustable? We just don't actually know. So it's almost like we're performing our own little social experiment, which is, yeah, kind of quirky, kind of cool.
Lewis, what do you think about new puppy owners and I guess the change to the not being able to attend the first puppy consults? Because I know if they're coming at 6 to 8, 10 to 12, 14 to 16 weeks, usually those puppy consults and then, you know, the D-sex appointment, there's a lot of FaceTime with the vet where the vet's saying, oh, okay, well, if you want her to not jump up on you when you come into the room, here's how to do that. And okay, if you want her to not eat your shoes, here's how to do that. And I guess doing consults, you know, as a curbside service or without the owners in the room, there's a lot of that FaceTime that the owners aren't getting. I know I've got a friend in Melbourne who's just got a new puppy, and she's been ringing me saying, oh, we kind of just drop her off for her vaccinations and we don't know what to do. She's eating all our furniture. And I've been taking them through the puppy preschool course that I used to teach, and I've been sending them the, you know, all the documents and taking them through it. But do you think there'll be an impact with missing those face-to-face appointments?
Look, as far as puppy behaviours that I guess what owners would call problem behaviours, where it's normal behaviour for a puppy but owners see it as a problem, that sort of stuff, I mean, majoritively over time as puppies gets older, that's actually goes away. You know, they stop mouthing, they stop chewing things they shouldn't, they get toilet trained eventually. You know, it seems like it's an urgency in those first consults. And I agree with, you know, certainly the information we give certainly helps our clients. I guess my biggest concern is actually that socialization stuff that is a big part of puppy school that they're missing. And then I reckon I'm seeing, and I don't know, me and Robbie have sort of talked about this on the podcast, I'm seeing a little bit of dogs that they're only seeing their owners. Puppies are only seeing their owners, and then they're coming and seeing me, and then I'm potentially giving them something that's a little bit painful. So then when I see them in 4 weeks' time, they remember me. It's not diluted out by going to the park and seeing 50 other people, or going to puppy school, or coming to the clinic having a fun time. So they see me again in 4 weeks' time and they're like, whoa, I remember you. It's so strong in my mind. And they're actually more nervous in the clinic than would be at a normal time. So, yeah, look, I certainly think we do give a lot of information to clients, and that, I think that helps them a lot. And there can be a real panic phase when you've got that puppy and you don't know what to do. But I reckon most of that stuff's just going to sort itself out over time. It's the actual stuff that's affecting and potentially having behavior problems, where the puppy has got behavior problems, not something that's just affecting the owners.
Now, do you think that, like you said, you're having these puppies come in and then they might be a little bit more nervous because there's no other people to kind of wash out the bad memory of coming to the vet, but what do you think vet clinics can do to try to help make that experience better? Because I know a lot of the patients that we see, patients tend to be more anxious with their owners. So now we have a way to actually combat that. Like, now we can actually get patients in the hospital away from their owners, where they actually might be a little bit more comfortable, but then it's also kind of our duty to try to help them make them more comfortable versus constantly catering to the client. Like, now we don't really need to do that because we're not having a conversation while also trying to love on this puppy. Now we can love on the puppy and do what we need to do and kind of just teach them that the whole visit's not all bad, and we're not ignoring them by talking to the client.
Yeah, look, I'm probably a little bit different. I think my impression is, I reckon dogs that are anxious in general are actually more anxious without their owners present, is my feeling. I reckon owners, not casting aspersions on other people's sort of ability to read body language, that sort of thing. But often if you've got a dog that is in a consult without the owners and it seems like it's frozen and seems calm, I reckon underlying it's just shut down. I really reckon when you've got owners there, they're a lot more comfortable, a lot less anxious. And as far as sort of how to go about that thing of giving injections when owners aren't there and trying to make it a fun experience, I mean, I'm a classic for it. I try and do everything. The puppy's on the floor for the first 10 minutes, I'm on the floor with it. You know, owners aren't there, but I'm on the floor. I'm smearing peanut butter on the floor. I'm dropping treats everywhere.
we're playing, we're doing all the fun stuff. I'm examining it, having fun. But even still, while I'm doing that, I still, when I give that needle, there are some pups that just seem to,
they respond.
And then I just can't get them back. The next visit, when I get them back, I just know that they've had, they've remembered that, that previous experience. So yeah, I haven't really got a solution for us. I think we're all doing our best. Just be nice to have owners back. I think it's horrible to say as a vet, because for years I've been saying, would it be great if we could just be a vet and, you know, and have no owners in the clinic and just have animals.
Especially as far as nurses and technicians are concerned. I think, Robbie, you were talking about the inefficiencies. And I mean, for us, we've had clients back in the clinic for a while, and it was such a welcome change to bring them back in, because prior to that, and you guys might still be experiencing this, nurses and technicians were just stretched so thin, because whereas they may not usually be required in the consult room to help with a patient, you know, they were having to go in every time and be helping with that puppy because the owner wasn't there. So I certainly can see that the strain that's that has been placed on nurses and technicians in the GP setting in that sense. And I guess in a specialist setting, are they usually not without, they're usually without their owners for the majority of the visit if you're doing a workup and that sort of thing, or how do you usually experience that?
Yeah, I think it especially, well, in my clinic, I'm not sure how it is with all of them. I mean, I think Jordan and I agree, like in a specialty setting, I love not having clients in the building. And I think it also depends on how clinics are doing curbside. Because for us, we have the client call in as soon as they get there, and over the phone, we go over the full history and ask all of our questions, and then say, okay, meet us at the door. And then they literally just hand off at the door. Whereas I'm seeing some clinics that the techs are going out into the parking lot, going into people's cars, asking them questions outside. And I'm like, you're actually not mitigating any risk right there, which is pointless if you're trying to not be exposed to it. So for me, it's like, I do everything on the phone. My clients are very receptive to the conversations. They're also doing it from the comfort of their car. And then, you know, the handoff is super quick, and then everything else is in my treatment area. And, you know, most of that stuff, like the physical exam, ultrasounds, lab work, and all that stuff would have been done without a client there anyway. So it is a very different experience than like general practice. So for me in specialty, it works really well.
I'll say that working in anesthesia, even pre-COVID, I don't have a lot of contact directly with clients. If they had a big concern, either the anesthesiologist or I myself might email them. So I really didn't have a lot of face-to-face with clients anyway. However, since COVID and since, you know, house remodel, trying to make that extra money, I picked up some ER shifts. And let me tell you, the ER now curbside is a completely different animal than it used to be. I think we're so bottlenecked. Our ER wait times are anywhere between 2 and 3 hours. We have had people, We have like told people, you need to go somewhere else. Like, you're too critical, and we don't have the staff and we don't have the resources to get you where you need to go.
Yeah, that's what we did.
Or to get, you know, the patient, we can stabilize them, and then maybe sometimes we've had to ship to the university near us because we are just so inundated with patients. The last curbside day that I did in the ER, I think that, again, this is just my frustration. I'm sure maybe other people are experiencing it too. We go out to the car, we triage at the car, and I don't know how many times this has happened, but the owner, like, oh, I didn't bring a leash with me, I just figured you would take the dog. Okay, cool. The one dachshund, I tried to, you know, I was like, all right, that's fine, he's a little dachshund, I'll just, you know, pick him up. And then she was like, oh no, he bites, he's bite you. And I was like,
I know, okay, I have leashes, great. I have slip leads in my pocket, because I'm like, I always use our leash and just let the owner keep theirs, because that's the other thing too, right? I've seen people talking about like losing patients in the parking lot because they back out of their collars. Yes. And so we just, it's always our slip leads. But I agree with you, our emergency department. So I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area, and our emergency department average wait time is 4 hours right now. Wow. And
what the hell is that going on?
there's a lot of emergency clinics near me. I have one a couple blocks over and they're just as busy as us. Our sister hospital, half an hour away, same kind of thing. So there's been a lot of, we've actually closed down emergency a couple of times because we're like, we can't accept anything else. We're completely capacitated, like full capacity, you know, or we don't have enough oxygen tanks right now because we have so many patients in oxygen, like you have to go somewhere else, which is horrible when you've got a respiratory patient. You're like, sorry, you gotta go somewhere else. So I definitely have seen emergency is busier, and I think the caseload is much more than it was previously. Not just, you know, everything's a little bit less efficient, but I think the caseload is more. I think people are staring at their animals. I really think they're like, I need to get out of the house. I'm going to take my dog to the vet because I have time.
And maybe just like a hypersensitivity to symptoms and illness and anxiety and medical anxiety.
Yeah.
What's got to be frustrating on both parts though, too, is that like, because things are curbside, like clients can't actually see that you truly are ridiculously busy. Like they see, because we're sending, like we send clients like away, we're like, it's going to take us 30, 40 minutes, go grab lunch. So like our parking lot doesn't look that full, and neither does our lobby because nobody's in it. And so clients are like, well, what the hell is taking you so long? And I'm like, no, like we're really busy.
Yeah. They were like that before COVID right now too.
Because like the clients aren't here, like taking up space in the exam rooms or in the lobby.
It's always the case, isn't it? Even in non-COVID times, it can look so quiet out the front. Yeah. And you're
I just
like,
feel like with like a 4-hour wait time, you'd be like, that's ridiculous. Nobody's in there. But like they can't really see what's going on in the back, which is kind of frustrating. But I know, I got to say, there has been a few positive changes. Like we were a little inefficient at first, but I think we're getting the hang of it now. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, like, client communication and client education, I feel like I get more time to do that than I used to. I don't feel as rushed because it's not like hurry up and get to the next room because my patient's already here. I've already done the history. I've already done that. Now my doctor's working it. So I'm going to go finish up with this client and go over their full discharge. And really, I feel like I get more of a connection, even though it's over the phone and they can't really see or feel like my empathy towards whatever they have going on. It is a little bit different, but I got to say that I think client communication actually has gone up, at least on my end, it seems to be.
Yeah, I definitely have used a lot more electronic resources, which is great. And I don't get as much pushback as I used to. I feel like previously clients would push back and be like, oh, I don't want it emailed. Now they just kind of expect it, which is really nice. And we, you know, we have handouts that we attach to our, you know, go home instructions that is like, how do you transition to a new diet? Here's all the, you know, information about the disease process. And so, yeah, I think for us, we're able to do a lot more electronically, which is nice. And clients are receptive. Sometimes,
yeah,
and I don't read it, but
I've also found that the emailed discharges, I think helps us out a lot because, I mean, half the time, I don't know how you guys do it in your practices, but as an ER tech, they say, can you go discharge this patient? And I go out with my discharge instructions and I hand them a copy and then I go over it with them and they don't have a chance to actually look at that before I'm talking to them. So if they get that as an email while they're waiting for me to call them to go over stuff, they can look at that and say, well, I don't understand this. What does this mean? Instead of just nodding their head and saying, okay. And then when they get their home,
or
like,
losing it in the car and being like, well, you never told me that. And I'm
or losing it in the car.
Yeah. I got to say, I think communication's definitely increased and just the ability to actually like get clients to understand a little bit better seems to have gone up.
Has anybody done anything with telemedicine? Any sort of telemedicine appointments or anything like that?
My clinic is experimenting with it, but it hasn't gone live. But I do know that they're working on a system to do that. And I think a couple of the partners have used it, but it hasn't rolled out to the rest of us yet.
We've done a few like rechecks for like anxious cats or grumpy cats that it's mostly going to be the doctor talking about diets or something anyway. Like with our IBD patients and stuff like that, we've had several people researching into like raw diets and homemade diets for their pets, like while out on COVID, because I think they have the time. And so we've done kind of like recheck consults for that. My doctor just talking to him about what might be best in those situations.
Gotcha. But... yeah, we've avoided it. We've avoided it. It's, I just think it's one of those tricky ones that, you know, once it starts, how do you stop it? Mm-hmm. You know, and unfortunately, you know, we've been in a situation where people feel like they can ring us up and talk to us anyway. And then if we reach that point, we go, well, now it's going to cost you a recheck fee. That makes you seem like a bit of an a-hole, you know? So, mm-hmm. For us, we just avoided it. We didn't even worry about it. Extra level of complication. You know, it probably wouldn't have changed things that much for us. So we thought, not even gonna stress on it.
I think for GP, I can see where telemedicine, I don't see how it would work. You know, it's like you can't really do it for puppy visits because you got to give vaccines, you know, and it's, and anytime you have to have a physical exam involved, I feel like telemedicine just really isn't the greatest option. I think for maybe behavioral stuff, I can see that
100%
being a great option. But yeah, I think that's probably why telemedicine hasn't taken off as much as some people had thought it might when all this started. Cause I know there was a lot of talk about it originally.
Yeah. It's not necessarily a profession that can go well with look, if I hold my cat's tail up here and does its bum look weird to you? Hang on, I just got to get the angle a bit right on that camera, you know?
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately we're kind of a hands-on profession, aren't we? So and like I say, we just didn't want the complication of having people ring up and say, look, it's going to cost you to talk to the vet, you know, and especially where if no one else is doing it in the area, people ring around and find somewhere else. So
I will say that this is not about telemedicine. I'm going to segue a little bit into the other positives. I think one of the huge positive things to come out of this is that it was already a really hot job market for technicians. Right now, technicians are so in demand. The job market is crazy, and like the salaries are better because you're so in demand. And I tell people all the time, like, use this opportunity to negotiate the hell out of your job. You know, don't just take whatever is given to you. Really use your negotiation skills to make sure you're getting uniform benefits and CE benefits and adequate vacation time and all that stuff. So I think that technicians are in a really good space right now as far as the job hunts go.
I think that's a really good idea.
I agree on that. Yeah. We've had
now's the opportunity to be like, we're obviously needed.
Yeah, we've had in our area, we've had some clinics actually open, which blows my mind. And so there is a huge shift going on between clinics, especially the specialty practices. And salaries definitely is one of the things that is kind of insane right now. Because especially with like emergency clinics and some of those other ones, they're so desperate for technicians, that they're offering crazy amounts for people. And I think too, you know, I think that's something where if you're in a practice that maybe you had thought about not working there for whatever reason, I think things have become hyper-focused as well for a lot of people. And knowing what our level of capacity is, I think has been something that, I think that's been pushed to the forefront too. I know Jordan and I have talked about it. I had to actually cut back hours because I was so burnt out. And I think it's been a really good thing for me personally, because I wasn't able to handle the full time. I couldn't. I'm probably at the point where I can probably start thinking about it again. But, there's technicians, there's less of us out there, I think, too, because I think, you know, some people had to stay home and be parents. So they didn't have the option of working. So I think that's also affecting job market right now too.
Yeah.
I gotta say, it's definitely made it so I was able to speak up and say what I need, because I was notorious for never saying no, ever. So I was always working. And I think when I took my job, I started and I was like, when my son goes to school, I'm going to go back to part-time. Well, that was last year and I didn't do that. And this year I was like, well, now I don't have the option. Like, I have to go part-time. Like, I have to cut my hours. I have to be home for my kids and I have to do stuff for me. Like, I need me time. Despite the fact that we're so busy, I definitely still had the guilt, but my boss was very welcoming to it. And he was like, you need to do what you need to do. Thank God. Cause I think I would have lost my mind if I was working full-time and teaching full-time and doing all the other stuff. But it's definitely made me, I think, a better, just have a better ability to kind of stick up for what I need in this career. So.
I think this was perfect because over in the States this week, it's Vet Tech Appreciation Week, isn't it, guys? Vet Nurses Appreciation Week.
Yeah.
We're definitely, as a vet myself, massive appreciation of what you guys are doing, particularly during this COVID period. I mean, you guys, you're bearing the brunt of, well, from GP practice, certainly the irate clients, the clients that want to come in the clinic, that can't come in the clinic, that, you know, are not happy with what they was, you know, told on the phone. Why aren't you not busy at the front? You know, how can you be busy at the back? Why is it a 4-hour wait? You know, so it's a good little bring in there that you guys, you know, massive appreciation for you guys. And it's good that they have a week dedicated to it. It's great.
I was about to segue to that too, actually, Lewis, because the Friday, the 9th of October in Australia is Vet Nurse Day. And as we were all talking about how crazy busy it is, I was going to say, for me, the irony every year of Vet Nurse Day is that I try to organize something for my team. My husband and I own a practice, a GP practice, and I try to organize something for my team. And it's hard to stop at any point during the day and say, let's all have lunch. Or, you know, we organize, last year we had a masseuse come in, and a couple of years before that we had a beauty therapist come in and do manicures and pedicures. But the thing is that a couple of people always have to come in on their day off if you're going to do something like that. So this year I feel like it's just compounded, like, how are we going to stop for lunch? But that's the thing about Vet Nurse Day and Vet Tech Week, you do kind of have to carve out time to say, okay, you guys are worth it, and we are just going to even book light for the day just so we can all sit down and have something to eat and give you guys a present and that sort of thing. So for me, I've been trying to organize something for the last week and chatting to my team, and they're all like, oh yeah, massage is great, but we don't want to come in. We really need our day off, and lunch would be good, but let's keep it to 15 minutes and something that we can reheat in the microwave if we're busy. So that just sucks for me every year. You want to do something great, but it's like,
yeah.
When?
Yeah. We talk about doing like a team building exercise during Vet Tech Week, like just over the weekend, like something fun. We've talked about going paintballing before and like,
oh, go and shoot each other.
Nice. Yes.
What really better way to bond with your coworkers?
Yeah.
100%. Just take out some aggression on each other. We appreciate you, but
yeah. But I'm gonna
stole my pen, damn it! Yeah.
And I know it was you, so I'm gonna aim this paintball straight at your crotch. Yeah, you know, do it again. Yeah, you know, and I'll do it again.
Yeah. We do have a new one over here where it's actually, you can go and do axe throwing. I don't know if you guys have that.
Yes. Oh, there's actually a place right behind my daughter's gymnastics place that like, even sells beer, because like a lot of these places are BYOB, and I'm like,
sharp objects and throwing. Yeah,
that just sounds like super America right there. I'm going to drink this beer and then I'm going to throw that axe at that tree.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, and then we're going to have a barbecue that's been cooking for 6 hours, that's been stewing in barbecue sauce. Yeah. Awesome.
Exactly.
The other thing that I would love to do is, have you seen the smash rooms?
Yes.
Yeah, they like have old TVs and you just have sledgehammers. Yeah,
smash rooms. Break a bunch of crap.
Break a bunch of stuff.
Oh my
like
gosh.
For Vet Tech,
yes, we could do Vet Tech,
I feel like that
one
would be amazing.
Yeah. Oh. Going back to the paintballing thing, I feel like we should arrange a clients versus veterinary staff paintball.
Oh yeah.
Especially when it's like an 8-hour wait and they're all pissed off.
Oh my God.
No, here you go. Here's some airsoft for you. Here's some for you. There's some camouflage out there and some trees in the woods.
We have a 4-hour wait, but we do have a paintball room.
Yes. Smash. That's how we keep our clients busy.
With that, Jeff, which clients are you in, are you inviting there, mate? Are you inviting the
all
good clients as a reward? Or are the ones that are that bottom 10% that take up 50% of your time, are they the ones that you're specifically aiming the invitations to?
I think anyone, sure. Like anyone who says the words, I'm friends with the owner, like, then they get an invite. Like they get the invite.
Oh, yeah.
Or I know four veterinarians, and I'm like, oh, really?
Well, I don't want to see an intern.
My sister-in-law is a vet, so can I get the estimate in the record?
I don't want to see an intern. I want to see the faculty.
Let's say breeder, but
the other one is I think about 6 or 8 bricks in this place should have my name on it for the amount of money that I've spent.
Yeah.
That's one that I like.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
a good one.
We hear a lot.
Yes.
Wing with my name on it.
Yep. Yeah. Well, we do have that. It's called the brachycephalic wing.
Oh my God. So true. Yes. Yeah.
Very short entry into that though. You know, and very, very poor, airflow through there. It's really hard to breathe.
Blue walls.
Very, very hard to get through.
Sometimes you have to squeeze through there on your side.
It's very loud.
Yeah. What do you guys think? Overall, being technicians yourself, most of you, what do you guys like to receive from your management or your bosses from Vet Tech Week?
Excellent question. Let's get our pens and paper out.
I will say that I see this on like the Facebook groups all the time. First of all, acknowledge the week. Like at least
I think Kat's idea of like booking light for a day is stellar. Yeah. Like, it's just like, you guys deserve a break. We're still going to work, but we're just going to like try to take it easy today. Like, that's great.
Yeah. And we try to do some social media acknowledgement as well in the week, in the lead up, like on my practice page this week, we highlight one nurse every day or one veterinary assistant every day and just let them say, this is what I want the world to know about what I do.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. I thought massages and pedicures and that sort of thing were great, but until, you know, this year they've piped up and said, it's good if you're going to work that day, but it's not good if you're not. So my team always like things like potted plants and like something physical as well. And I feel like vouchers are always good because you can spend your money on whatever you want.
Wine is good.
Yeah.
Wine. It's a good time to be investing in wine.
Wine, pens,
in 2020,
and coffee cups. Sure. I'm a big fan of coffee cups, coffee mugs. Like
my supervisor 3-4 years ago gave me this.
That's
see how worn it is.
I got some of those.
And I drink my coffee every single day. I use that's my coffee cup.
I got some good coffee mugs with like our logo on it and then all of my staff's names and like RBT on the other side of it. So that
we did
2 years ago and I filled them with pens and Sharpies and highlighters.
I think one thing I really liked was I got 1 year I got a really good pair of bandage scissors.
It's the little things.
It is. They're clipped to me, so they don't go anywhere.
You lost it the next week.
But it's the stuff that I can use, I guess.
I mean, I'm gonna throw this out there because why not? If my company were to give me like a paid day off that I could use whenever I wanted, I would be like, that is the best vet tech present ever.
a bonus day off.
Just be like, bonus day off, cool.
Yeah, we do bonus days on the academic calendar. Like if New Year's Eve and New Year's Day is the holiday. But if New Year's Eve say falls on a Friday or something like that, it's a bonus day. And it is if you work that day, if that's on your normal schedule day, then you just get an extra day of PTO you can take whenever.
Oh, that's smart. Yeah.
So it is really nice to cash that in whenever something good comes up.
Yeah. Yep. I think another thing too that would be brilliant of all of us to do, veterinary technicians, nurses, doctors, is I think client education on what we do so that they can better appreciate what we do in our clinics too.
Yeah.
Which is really easy with social media in this day and age. And I usually get either the vets or the nurses to write the content that goes with each nurse. So last year we had the vets write something about each nurse, whereas this year I gave them a couple of questions and had them, you know, address what's the biggest public misconception about what we do, or what should the world know about what we do? So you really can sort of address your clients. And last year, because we did one nurse every day, by the time Vet Nurse Day rolled around, we had clients delivering cupcakes and chocolates and flowers because that's they awesome. Knew it was coming.
Or even just do like a survey of like, ask your social media fans of whatever hospital you work for, what do you think a technician does, and get the feedback from that. And then you can go from there and say, well, yeah, we hold the animals, but we do 85 million other things on top of that, and giving that opportunity to teach clients about what we actually do.
I love that. And then I'm going to segue a little bit to what are you guys doing as the podcasts? Are you guys doing anything fun with your podcasts for Vet Tech Appreciation Week or Vet Nurse Day, or anybody doing anything?
We're going to be posting a lot of social media stuff. I think every single day we're going to have something dedicated to that. We haven't really hashed out exactly what we're going to do. We'll probably have to talk
this
about
week.
That.
It's a week away.
Next week.
Yeah, sometime this week. Yeah.
I know.
Don't worry, Yvonne and I have done that too. We're like, yeah, we got all this stuff coming up.
I know Lewis has been working on a particularly in-depth interpretive dance.
Nice.
Helped celebrate. He's been hand sewing on the sequins as well. So it's look out for that in the social media feed. It's going to be awesome.
Well, unfortunately, I'll share it.
Unfortunately, it doesn't go well on a podcast, so I won't be showing it today.
No.
Well, he's actually doing it right now.
Just under the desk, though. It's sort of all waist down. Yeah,
yeah. Quite Scottish.
So Jordan and I, Jordan and I plus Dave and Jeff, like, it's our 1 year anniversary for Vet Tech Appreciation Week. We launched the podcast, so I know Jordan and I are doing. we've got
raffles.
We've got raffles. We've That's got awesome. Some,
which I'm a little jealous because I don't get any. Like, I can't win any of the stuff.
It's true.
I'm like, this is really good stuff.
So we'll put the link for the raffle for everybody that listens to this podcast for that as well. But we have the raffles. We have some continuing education that we're doing this week. One just with our podcast, and then one with Royal Canin, which is really cool. And then. We've got, obviously, this is the bonus episode, which is super fun. Do we have anything else planned for this week? I can't remember.
I mean, we probably do, but I don't remember what it is.
Yeah. I'm curious.
It's been a little
hectic. I'm curious for you guys down in Australia. What is the national or the country perception of vet nurses down there? Is it do a lot of Australians know what vet nurses are and what they do, or is it a pretty big disconnect down there?
Kat, give us your interpretation first.
Okay. I think that it's both ends of the spectrum. I think at one end of the spectrum, you have people who overestimate perhaps the level of training that goes into the qualification. And they might also assume that everybody in the veterinary clinic who's called a veterinary nurse is qualified, which is not the case. So sometimes they might be thinking that somebody in front of them is similar to a human registered veterinary nurse when they're not even a qualified veterinary nurse, or maybe they're qualified but haven't done any CPD for 10 years and they're not a registered veterinary nurse. But then at the other end of the spectrum, you have people who, whether they're qualified, registered or not, they have a lot of knowledge and they have a lot of amazing skills and experience, and yet they are confronted by a client who says, can I please speak to the vet, and doesn't want to talk to them and really underestimates what they can do. So I think it's at all ends of the spectrum.
And I think a lot of it comes down to respect as well. You know, like if you're someone who just respects people and respects that everyone's got a job to do, then you're going to look at it and go, oh, wow, you know, whether you're a vet nurse or, you know, you're stacking shelves or something, you're someone who respects it. Unfortunately, some people look at it and doesn't matter how much you try and convince them. You know, they even think that vets aren't worth it either. You know, they just go, oh, no, it's all just a waste of money. And, you know, you're no good. And, you know, so it's one of those tough ones where the people that, you know, you're gonna have some people that you're never going to convince, and you can't worry about those people because they're going to be pains in the bum no matter what. I think there is a perception, particularly in, because we don't have, I guess, you know, there's the TAFEs that do like the vocational education training to get your vet nurse degree, you know, or certificates. The Cert 4. That's the Now the interesting thing is now we've got the certainly at Melbourne Uni they've got the undergraduate degree or what is it the undergraduate version of it. I know the DVM is the graduate one. Bachelor of Veterinary Technology, something. But it's I've been out of uni for way too long, so I don't know. They keep changing the all the letters change, but it doesn't matter. And I thought, that might be a pathway of where they're looking to try and get people into being vet techs rather than vet nurses, you know, something where you actually hold an undergraduate degree, but it hasn't really happened that way. Mm. So I guess the hard thing is you might go to a vet clinic and there's someone that's worked there for 35 years and has never done any certificate, but they know exactly what they're doing and they know all the information because they've heard the vet talk about it for 30 years compared to someone who's gone and done their Cert 4. So, yeah, I guess in Australia, to answer your question, Jeff, it's really, you know, it's kind of quite nebulous. You know, I think that they're all bunched in the one thing, as Kat was saying. But the people who are going to respect them are going to respect them no matter what they say because they think they're getting good information from them. People that aren't, you're never going to convince.
Yeah.
I think clinics can do something about getting that respect for their team, though, because it is a top-down thing. If you have a vet who comes out of the consult room with the client and says, now I'm going to hand you over to Sarah, who is actually a qualified veterinary nurse, and she's going to take you through the prescription diet that we discussed in the consult room. If you have any questions, you can ring her. She knows everything that there is to know about this. Then that client's going to respect that veterinary nurse. Whereas if there's not that proper handoff and that respect, similarly, just with the smoke and mirrors, things like having decent uniforms, you know, I've seen practices where there's not a good website and nurses aren't bought uniforms and they just wear like the free scrub top that came from the rep's, you know, visit or pants from home. And so I think that there is a lot you can do to really present your team and say, these are people who should be respected.
I don't know how much you guys know sort of about our system. Robbie touched on a little bit there, but certainly with vet techs, I think, you know, it's a more defined pathway in a way. So, you know, and when you come out of it, you guys are almost sort of paramedical in that, you know, you put the catheters in, you might anaesthetize the animals, you probably do 80% of the procedures and the vet comes in and oversees it. Whereas in Australia, you know, you can pull off someone who's still in high school and put them at the reception of your vet clinic and they're perceived as their vet nurse, you know. So right up to, like Robbie said, you know, the 35-year-old person, 35-year-old experienced nurse who's been at your clinic for years. It's sort of difficult in that, you know, there's no defined sort of pathway that says.
I don't know if that is actually, I think it's exactly the same in the United States.
To be honest, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Because there are the same thing. You have technicians or tech assistants, technically, right? Tech assistants who have been in the clinic for 35 years are, you know, the top of their game, but they've never gone to school. And then you have others that have gotten their associate's degree. They are licensed in the state. And then there's states in the United States that don't even have a licensure. So, you know, I think it's very much the same as you guys. And I think it also, there are clinics where the perception is it doesn't matter if you have a license or not. You're treated the same. And then there's clinics that very much uphold, you know, the law, which is only a licensed, registered, certified technician is allowed to do these procedures. So I think, you know, I've been doing this for over 18 years, and I think there's a huge difference from when I first started. But I think we still have a long way to go. And I think Vet Tech Appreciation Week is one of those things where not only do we appreciate our technicians, right? We also try to educate clients and us as far as like what we can do with our degrees and the benefits of having it. And so I think it's not just a Australia problem or United States. It sounds like it's the same all over.
Yep.
I mean, last time we chatted, I know I'm sort of bringing back to COVID again. I think we one of my questions I think I asked is certainly in America it was a lot more prevalent than in Australia, and oh, it still is. Yeah, of course. Sorry. And I guess I did ask a question. Does anyone know of anyone who's been affected as far as veterinary vet techs by COVID?
Clinic shutdowns and things sort like that.
Yeah. I had it.
Yeah. And just backing up. So sorry. Wow. At that time, everyone said we didn't know anybody.
Yeah.
And we all thought, wow, aren't we really good? Isn't our hygiene really good? Aren't we amazing? But Jeff, wow.
Yeah, I think I was the first one. Right. So our clinic was the first, I think, out of all of us because we talked about it at some point. We had, I think, 6 people in my hospital test positive. Wow. And we did do a shutdown. There were 2 days that we were shut down because there was like 2 waves, but we think they were kind of together and it was right in the very beginning. And we shut down the hospital, we did a deep clean, and then, it was up to everybody, you know, whether or not they wanted to come back in or if they wanted to self-isolate at that time. Cause, our business was working very closely with the CDC as far as like what precautions and things do we need to take. Since then, we actually haven't had anybody else test positive in my specific clinic. We have had people in our sister hospitals, which are, within an hour of us, all of them, that have tested positive. But the good thing is, with all of our precautions in place, it was like one person instead of like the entire department kind of thing. So we definitely have been affected. And so I know for my clinic, I believe the plan is to still be kind of where we're at with lockdown until after the first of the year. I don't think there's a specific date of letting anybody in and relaxing things, but, that was early on. So.
Yeah, I was exposed, but I tested negative and I never had symptoms. Jeff, you said you tested positive?
Yeah, I had it early July, late June, early July. I actually came home from work one night because I actually just thought it was like allergies and hay fever. I was really run down and just had like a scratchy throat and like a little bit of a cough. And I texted my supervisor. And I said, if this was any other year, I wouldn't even bother you, but I feel like I need to be responsible and have you tell me what you want me to do. And so she sent me home. I got a test the next day, which was on a Thursday. And I actually didn't get those results until 8 days later on a Friday. And I still hadn't gotten results yet. And thankfully, my work Tufts was very proactive and they were, they never second guess anything. They just said, stay away until you have a result or whatever. So 8 days later on a Friday, I still didn't have results. And my wife found a clinic here nearby that was doing the rapid tests. So we both went on that Friday morning and we got results within 15 minutes and I was positive then. She was negative. And then that afternoon, I got my results from my test 8 days prior that was also positive. So I got 2 positive tests in the same day, though they were taken 8 days apart. We had our, right when I had symptoms, my sister-in-law and brother-in-law had stayed with us a couple of days. They both tested positive as well. None of the three of us is like, as far as symptoms go, anywhere you go, if you travel or whatever, the big thing, right, is always temperature. Even though I had chills, none of the three of us ever had fevers. We were checking, that was actually why I waited till the evening time to talk to my supervisor, because I was checking my temperature every hour at work and it was normal every time. None of the three of us ever had fevers. They both lost sense of smell and taste for like, 2 weeks or so. And I just had chills and like I was fatigued. That was the big thing. And that lasted maybe 3 to 5 days. And then I was largely okay. But I was out of work for like 2 weeks. And now, I think there's been one other, I don't know who it was, but I think there's been one other person that's tested positive at Tufts, but we actually have testing on site 2 days a week. So we go into like the large animal area, we swab our own noses and we get results the next day. So now we're all tested like 2 days a week. And thankfully been negative since, but yeah.
Yeah. Wow. It's interesting. In Melbourne, there's a we've just gone through this stage four lockdown where you're not supposed to go 5 kilometres away, and you're only allowed out for an hour, and you know, you're not allowed to see anyone. The kids haven't been to school for ages, and yet I haven't heard of a single clinic in Melbourne where someone has tested positive and where the clinic has had to shut down for a deep clean. You know, and I know that there. I know that there are clinics that have still got clients going in. I know clinics where they've still had full families going in too, right? You know, as well as clinics that are doing doing the team A, team B approach, you know? So like I was talking about it with my practice manager that, you know, it's one of those things where anything works until it doesn't work.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah. So yeah. It's, absolutely.
It's whatever you try and do, and that's always fine until it's not.
Yeah. Yeah, I will say, I think for me, like, you know, to be very honest, it like, I hate to spin it lightly, but I had very, very mild symptoms. I was very fortunate, but it's like that period of unknown. Like I've also had shingles, and I feel like there was a period of time in history where, you know, people got chickenpox, but they didn't know that third, you know, some length of time later, they were going to have a reemergence of the pox virus and actually have shingles until decades had passed and people started having it. And they finally connected the dots. And I know there's been, you know, reports of some athletes that have had, you know, cardiac changes and different things. So I actually have a cardiac MRI scheduled. So this is Saturday on Tuesday to have that checked out, because I already have pre-existing heart disease. But you know, that just kind of like unknown as far as like wherever it is down the road, does that manifest into anything else? Like it's a virus, it's going to be in you until the end of time, just like anything else, any other virus. So who knows what it's going to remanifest itself as or what.
Wow. Did you take any of Donald Trump's treatment advice there, Jeff?
No, I did not. I did not do any bleach or Windex or what is it? Hydroxyquinolone, is that right?
Hydroxychloroquine.
Yes. Chloroquine, yes. No, I did the standard.
Oh my goodness.
just sit at home and rest and you know.
Netflix acillin.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. And
Netflix acillin.
And a glass of scotch for a sore throat.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing I've discussed with another veterinary technician friend is, and actually another veterinary nurse friend, is the importance of everyone continuing to take annual leave during this time. I know in Melbourne that would seem crazy to you guys because you haven't been able to go anywhere, but you know, we're worried about the mental health effect of people not taking time off and people being worked and worked and worked. And I mean, we're not even able to travel for conferences. For most of us, we'd at least get on a plane and go somewhere for a conference once a year. So I'm certainly encouraging my team to keep on thinking about taking leave.
Mm-hmm. You got to do that from a business point of view as well, from a liability of annual leave too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to put the business owner hat on, you got to make sure people are still taking their annual leave. Otherwise, you know, after 12 months, so that's something that we've been looking into as well.
I'm just at the end of 2 weeks of annual leave, and as far as mental health goes, I've been at home with my family and not being able to go anywhere at all. So I'm not sure that I'm sure it's nice to have a break and, but it'd be nice to go back to work as well.
Yeah. I'm also finishing up a week long vacation, but we're able to go places unlike you guys. So, which is nice. Cause with homeschool, we just up and went to Florida to visit my family. So that was nice, a mental break from work and kind of school. And being locked in the house, because it is very much work, home, and only do schoolwork and home and work all in one place. And it's very, it's a lot.
It's just work all the time, I feel like.
Yes.
You know, I told my husband that I just like almost like broke down like in Target. And I was like, I just want a break. I want one day where I don't have a job, whether that be today's job is being a third grade teacher, tomorrow's job is going to be in the clinic. And then, you know, as you guys probably know, you have like a side job. And I mean, frankly, I think it's amazing that you're still churning out like a consistent podcast, because I feel like I am just treading water a lot of the time, like between trying to be in the clinic full time and trying to make sure Oliver gets his schoolwork done and he gets the basketball practice on time. And, you know, oh my gosh, we have to do art now. Like what?
Yeah.
You know, so I feel like.
I know dads are doing it tough too, but I heard on the radio yesterday that they think that the pandemic and the lockdowns will have, you know, set us back decades as far as feminist kind of improvements of, you know, day-to-day life for women, because for people who are working from home, which I guess isn't really our industry, but usually if you're at work, there is a time of day when if someone wants to know, where do we keep this in the cupboard, or have we got any more of this, then they have to go find, you know, the other parent or another person or the sitter or whoever it is. But if you're the mom and you're at home working, then you can always be found, and someone can always come to you and say, how does this work? Where do we keep this? I want a sandwich.
100%. I mean, my husband tries to be super helpful, but I was at work one day and he was home with the kids doing schoolwork, and my daughter was still calling and texting me being like, I need help with the Wi-Fi. And I need this. And I'm like, your dad is like across from you. So then I called my husband and I'm like, what's going on? And he was like, I told her to wait a minute. Like, it was, you know, but it's like, it's still that need for mom. And even when I get home, like, my kids will very much be like, well, I had a really hard time with this assignment, so I'm going to wait till you get home from work and we'll do it tonight. And like, I have a quiz, so we're going to do that tonight. But, you know, then my daughter has to go to gymnastics. My son has to go to soccer, and then we got to take showers. And we got to get up and go to work in the morning. And like, it's a lot.
It is exhausting.
And you've just worked 10 or 12 hours.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And it's constant, like every other day, like, well, I needed help with this assignment. And like I said, my husband definitely tries, but the kids are very drawn to mom, and it's very much a mom job somehow.
I like to play this game where I tell myself that I'm going to finish this PowerPoint while I'm sitting next to Oliver and he's doing his third grade stuff, and it hasn't happened yet, but every time I'm like, yep, I'm going to sit next to you and I'm going to finish this PowerPoint. So hopefully the people at VMX are understanding that nothing is finished on time.
Nice.
Yeah, you accidentally have some like third grade math problems in there. You're like,
I bet you every single one watching that is going to totally understand.
100%. Like, there's no way. I'm trying to teach my fourth grader division, and I was like, I don't remember how to do it like this on a paper. Like, it's tough.
Get your calculator out.
Well, that's it. But my sixth grader, we were doing maths one day, and I was doing a problem with her. I was like, I really don't know how to bring down that fraction into a decimal, I think it was. And I went to work, and then, you know, smarter minds at maths at work, and we all went through it, and we couldn't do it. And then eventually we emailed the teacher, and they said, oh, no, you just get a calculator out. We went,
you think you have to do everything on paper?
Yeah,
it's crazy. Like, we're learning about electricity conducting, and my daughter's like, well, what this material is, that a conductor or an insulator? And I'm like,
let's find out. Let's stick it in the PowerPoint and see. Stands up. Yeah, it's a conductor. Doesn't?
Yeah, non-conductor. Yeah, exactly.
I'm like,
Alexa, is plastic a conductor or an insulator? And it's just.
Well, Oliver is going to end third grade, like, really, really knowing his drug classes and his pain pathways, because that's the only thing I really am capable of teaching.
Hey, if the math that he's learning is medical math, more power to him.
That's medical math.
Yeah.
That math is math we're all going to use someday, right?
For
100%.
Sure. 100%. For sure.
100%. Oh, yeah. Well, I think, speaking of like Oliver and kids and things, I think some kids probably need to get to bed soon, because we're recording this late in the States or early in Australia. So I guess let's just round it out with, I guess one thing you'd like to accomplish this next year, whether that's as your podcast. Yeah, let's go with podcast. One thing you'd like to accomplish this next year as with your podcast or your podcasty related things, because I know there's layers to that for a lot of people. And we'll head out, because, you know, Yeah, we had to talk about silly school for forever. Lewis and I, because I've seen stuff.
Lewis and I were hoping to do an OB for our 100th episode, but because the of COVID happening, that sort of coincided exactly with when 100 was. So we went 99, then 99 and a half, then 101. So at some stage, we've got to still record number 100. Now we're up to 129. So, you know, it's off in the distant memory. So actually being able to stand face to face and you know, make faces at Lewis in the same room, that's probably the podcast goal that I reckon we'd have this year.
I mean, that sounds like a good goal,
something achievable. Yvonne, that's what we're going in for.
Exactly.
All right, I'll go next. I want to get on a plane, go somewhere and record a live podcast, which I was meant to do at the beginning of this year. I was meant to go to the UQ conference and record a live podcast as part of that conference with two guests from the States, actually. And I was really looking forward to it. And I had somebody lined up to record the live sound. And for me, that would be a challenge because obviously you're in front of an audience and you can't be sort of editing things out. And it would just be that added level of interviewing skills. So for me, that was the next challenge I wanted to do. And thank you, COVID. I could not get on that plane. First world problems. But for me, that's what I'd like to do. And you know, within that is my wish that we can all start to get on planes and travel again because there's some kind of vaccine or some sort of development, obviously, with the virus.
I wholeheartedly think that's an amazing thing. And Jordan, I agree with you because that was also one of our goals this year.
Yes, yeah. That's what we were supposed to do at ACVAM. What about you, Tasha?
I mean, I just need to put some out. I mean, it's kind of a one woman show, although my husband is my editor. So he's the one who, you know, I'm like, hey, we could edit this episode, which he is, you know, he doesn't get paid for it all. And he's like, how did I get roped into this? And I was like,
yeah. That's what husbands are for.
But yeah, I think I just need to put out more episodes. But again, in the interest of 2020 COVID craziness going on in the United States, and just like right now, honestly, I don't have the bandwidth to like put anything else, put my energy into anything else. I just don't. And I want to be as ambitious as you guys. I'm just not there yet. So hopefully I'm going to get a couple episodes in before the end of the year.
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, girl, like, you are rocking with whatever you are doing as it is, so you don't have to add to your bandwidth. Like, you don't for have to worry sure. about that.
Be
you
proud of everything you've accomplished.
Great thing to acknowledge as well.
Keep going.
All right, Jeff and Dave.
Dave?
Well, I've been working for the last, I don't know how long it's been, week and a half on actually getting a website started. So we've been working on that. We also did want to do a live episode at IVEX, but that did not happen. Right. I don't know if we're going to do that next year. Like, I would love to do that next year.
But yeah, hopefully.
We'll see what happens. That's kind of where we're
at. Jeff can get the banjo out too at your OB. Nice.
Yeah. Ding, 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 ding.
The website game is fun, isn't it?
We talked to somebody and they said, oh, you could just do it through Squarespace or GoDaddy or Wix. They're all super easy now. And it's not that easy. There's a lot involved. And I'm now actually a week and a half into it. I'm starting to get the hang of it, but
yeah,
I keep finding new things to add and new things that I can add on to it. So hopefully soon.
And new things that break the things that you added.
Exactly. Fun. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. All that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I want to just throw out there too, like, one thing that we've really wanted to do with ours is, like, and it takes sponsorship dollars to do it, but you know, ultimately we would like to sponsor technicians to take their board exam or go to, you know, a conference to pay for them to go, you know, take their specialty certification exam or whatever it may be. And you know, we've kind of piecemealed some things together, but hopefully, you know, like, as far as sponsorship, like, we're not looking, like, none of us, we're not making money doing this, but like, that's the one thing I think we really want to do is, if we can bring sponsorship into the fold, is to do those kinds of things. So hopefully in 2021. Maybe that'll be a little bit more in the cards.
We have a couple things in the works, awesome. But nothing concrete yet.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's great. That's an amazing way for you guys to give back to. That's really, really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you? How about you ladies with, I am.
Oh boy. The next year, let's see. So we launched our membership site. I don't know. How long has it been now? 2 months maybe?
No. It's only been like a month since full launch.
Oh, it seems longer than that because I'm the one that's working on the website. So we're going to, you know, keep working on the membership site, which includes like the continuing education that's race approved. We would love to do interviews in person at conferences. Uh-huh. We had planned that as well for ACVIM. Yeah. I love the idea of the sponsorship though. Mm. That Jordan and I may have to talk about that. That's a great idea. I think, you know, helping give our community, really, because it's all of us, right? We share a community. Giving them something to get a leg up and do more than they thought was possible, I think is a big thing that I know Jordan and I, that's our big thing, is to make everybody be rock star technicians. So yeah.
Cool.
All right.
Well, so this was Internal Medicine for Vet Techs podcast, Vet Tech Cafe, Radio Vet Nurse, Two Vets Talk Pets, and the Anesthesia Nerds podcast. It's all of us. And we're just dorky veterinary people that like talking. So thanks for listening
gang.
All of us.
Yeah.
And anybody else got anything else we need to add at the end of this one?
Happy Vet Nurse Day. Absolutely. Happy Vet Tech Week.
Happy Vet Tech Week. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Yeah.
Can't believe you're the big father. Yeah. Congratulations, mate. It's amazing. Well done.
I know. I'm not. I feel so young too.
Look at day over 50, mate. It's good.
Thanks, man. Thank you. That's good. It's because of my moisturizer. That moisturizer you can put me on to, Lewis. It's fantastic.
Well, thanks, you guys. It was super fun hanging out with you. And, we'll put links in every place possible for all the podcasts. Have a wonderful week.
Hey.
Absolutely. Bye. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Scratch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening to the Vet Tech Cafe podcast today. We often talk about difficult issues facing our profession and chat with colleagues who have strong opinions of those issues. As such, we feel it is important to note that the opinions and views expressed by us as the hosts or our guests on the Vet Tech Cafe podcast are solely theirs and theirs alone, and do not represent any other person, business, institution, or any other entity. If you have questions relating to this, please email us at vettechcafe@gmail.com. Lastly, as Dave said during the intro, please like us, follow us, and take a minute to rate and review the Vet Tech Cafe podcast on whatever podcast platform you use. It really does help. Thanks again for stopping by the Vet Tech Cafe.